Hello, listeners. Lewis Matheny here with Local Matters, and I am in the studio today with David Jones of Cookeville, who's been a part of the revitalization and creative efforts that have left primarily our east side of our old courthouse square as an enviable sort of restoration project that's made it what was once a shopping district that kind of fell asleep, that he's brought back to life. And when I say enviable, Cookeville, as I've said before, the term for it is micropolitan. And we are one of the enviable micropolitans because of the efforts of people like you. So
Thank you. Let's
just start and say, David Jones, tell us how it all started and what's going on over there. However you feel like saying it.
Yeah. In 2010, right after the housing market crash, I was an employee at Cummins Filtration. And they started going through some layoffs. And I was low seniority, so I got laid off, and I went through a period of time where I was being laid off from work, and then I would be called back to work some, and then I'd be laid off again. So it wasn't really good for me fiscally to not be working, and also, too, just for anybody's overall, you know, state of mind, or, you know, it's good for people to be to work, you know. And I was kind of pining away, wanting to do something with myself. My dad had been dealing in antiques since he was a younger man, and we kept talking about, so after I got laid off, he and I kept kicking around the idea of opening up a store, but we always kind of felt like it'd be cost prohibitive, you know, starting it up and, you know, the overhead of it all. One night, my mother said, as we were sitting there, she said that she worked for a man. She did his book work. And she told us that, Sam only spends X amount of dollars. And when she threw that figure out there, me and Dad thought, well, we can handle that.
Right.
So he called me one morning in January, and he said, hey, there's this building. It's over here on the square. I want you to come take a look at it. And I drove right over there. I say one morning. This was like at 1 on a Saturday.
Okay.
You know, so I had gotten a little too comfortable. You know what I mean? Like, people need to work.
Yeah.
So I drove over there, and we went in the store. It was all partitioned off. It had been a photography studio. And I immediately thought, wow, this place is super neat. And then he took me upstairs. You know, he was like, we can go upstairs. There's a warehouse loft type space. And as soon as the door came open on that, it was something that I'll never forget. And it motivated me to be supremely interested in all the ideas and all the possibilities that space could be used for.
So we're talking to David Jones, owner of Jones Antiques, along with the Bitter Inn, who in many ways, probably wouldn't just announce it for himself, but was a visionary and is a visionary and sees through walls and sees the upstairs from the downstairs. And what he's done for this town has revitalized a district of the town. One of two, we have an interesting setup in the town of Cookeville, Tennessee, in that the original shopping district hovered around the original courthouse square. And when a train came through later, a large number of people took stores and placed them near the train station along with a hotel. But we've had these two great historic districts which suffered the loss that many big and small cities and small towns had in the 70s when architects and planners for towns thought that big plazas, which included malls with long, big open hallways with stores scattered around them, would be appealing. And initially it was just a unique idea. It was a sort of a fad. And as the mall fad faded, that both of those historic districts that we had long since been gathering dust and cobwebs. And in some cases we saw lawyers and doctors picking up offices, but for shopping and for entertainment value, they were still lacking. And you came in. Would it be fair to say you came in on the ground floor following maybe at least one restaurant with its idea of yours?
Yeah. So Char, which is next door to our building, they had already...
Which is a restaurant.
Yeah, Char is a restaurant, correct. They had already gone in and opened up a nice, you know, a premier place. And so, you know, people were kind of it was somewhat evident that people were moving back towards the downtown areas, you know, exposed brick, very fashionable, exposed rafters or tin ceilings. You know, these older, these things are too cost prohibitive to do now, in some sense. So the charm of these older structures is something that was starting to become more in vogue in larger areas. But, you know, here in Cookeville, you know, we kind of we get to things that are fashionable a little later than people like, you know, from New York, for instance. That actually more or less probably inspire the trends. So that's that where we came in. It was kind of early on. We did come in after Char, but it was something that we were compelled to do because the charm of the space, and I think Char.
The space, yeah. You know, we're also talking about architecture, and while you're making a comparison to New York City, I, as a person that's lived in New York for 30-something years now, but also live in Chicago, can tell you the pros and cons of both, and one is that New York City, unfortunately, all too rapidly raises rents on spaces that drive out authentic old mm-hmm. places that have been there forever. And all the great old restaurants, not all, but most all the great restaurants, the great fun bars that I would take people to, including my Aunt Jean, who came to New York City to visit on several occasions, are mostly gone. Whereas in Chicago, what I notice in living there is I drive down and look out an Uber or cab window at a restaurant sign that says since 1957 or since 1920 something. Mm-hmm. And those are still quite well preserved. So you recognize also an opportunity in terms of great architecture
yeah.
rather than picking a more modern building and
sure.
A strip mall, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, there you are on the Courthouse Square where people were for years, and other micropolitans across Tennessee and in the Southeast, having talked to Melinda Kiefer earlier today, we mentioned, have looked to her. And she's gone to there to help them and see what their vision is as well. And so we're seeing it happen in a lot of towns. So you're just a part of this great visionary movement that's been going on. Do you own, may I ask you this, is it a total of three buildings or is it one building with three storefronts? Am I
there's multiple addresses. It's one building. There's six South Washington, which is Jones Antiques. There's 8 South Washington, that's Willow Tree Market. There's 12 South Washington. That's the suite. We host smaller private parties.
And that's an amazing space. You're talking about is that actually called the suite?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I've seen this in person, and I think it's great. This was once, I think I'm correct in remembering, this was the jewelry store called Laverne.
It was Laverne and Janet's.
Laverne and Janet's.
Yeah. It started off as Stamps and then went to Laverne and Janet's.
So those people at the time very smartly took a narrow space in which all they needed was a long countertop filled with jewelry at a time when people really went into older jewelry stores like that, and just enough room to move, you know, down to the end of the store and back. And you took that same narrow space, which is how wide?
It's 10 feet.
10 feet wide. And you've got this space that people can host for banquets in that. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
There's a long banquet table or series of tables with a... Is it a banquette alongside one wall?
There's not a... That actually is something I'm interested in doing with that space. It's not there now, but that's interesting that you mentioned that because it is something I'd like to do.
Yeah.
What I was going for, honestly, there's an old pub in a movie, Snatch. Some people will be familiar with it. It's got a Brad Pitt in it.
I've always had to play the English subtitles on it because the way the bloke speaks in that movie is so hard to understand at times, you know, it's really difficult to understand, and I do know the movie, but go right ahead.
Well, so there's a pub in that film. It's a very small pub. It's called Yale Mitri. It's a very old pub in London. That's kind of what I was going for motif-wise in there. It's just a small European pub, dark walls. You know, ordinarily you don't take a room that's small and paint it dark. But, you know, if you're enjoying a drink, you might want to be in a place that's a little darker.
Yeah.
So.
No, the feel of each of these places, and I had your father on previously for a discussion about it, Rick Jones, whose son David Jones I'm talking to, who for the most part brought these brainchilds to fruition through his great creativity and vision. And the fact of the matter is, if you walk into what we're saying, we described him originally, David, today, as the owner of Jones Antiques. If you walk into Jones Antiques and then just say, may I take a peek upstairs and downstairs? And by the way, what's next door? Mm-hmm. You can be in hours in spaces that each are so individual and unique, mm-hmm. In something that's like a museum, quite frankly.
And that's what we're going for, honestly. We want to have a place that's inspiring and a place that people can spend a good amount of time and see something interesting for the duration of the time that they're there. That's the name of the game. You know, the antique store, we try to get things that are, you know, beautiful in their constitution, collectible, and things that are valuable. And then our spaces are decorated with those things as well. And we kind of got lucky with that, because right now I would say that those – that style is pretty heavy in, you know, modern decor. Like, it's, you see it, if you're at all familiar with any of the popular magazines now, you see a lot of that, you know, the exposed brick with the Chesterfield couch and, you know, a mid-century modern or industrial lamp, you know, and, you know, that's, you know, with the Edison bulbs, you kind of got that's, when we were going into this, we didn't expect that, you know, this thing was going to be trend-wise where it wound up being.
And in addition, I have to say, I found one of the original copies of Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon that had the original two stickers that you got when the album came out in the 70s, along with the two posters. So you have quite an admirable vinyl record collection, and we'll talk more about that. And we have so much to talk to with David Jones about, not just Jones Antiques and the Bitter Inn, but the really great assemblage of spaces that are there together underneath one roof. But we also have great sponsors to whom we need to take a listen that make this program possible. So we'll take a listen to our sponsors, and we will be right back with David Jones.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. OfficeMart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. OfficeMart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue, across from Hardee's. Shop local at OfficeMart.
Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm host Louis Matheny, and I'm talking to David Jones, one of the, quite frankly, and this isn't false flattery, creative geniuses in this area and of the places I've lived in New York City and Chicago, and a home I have in a thriving arts community very near where Washington crossed the Delaware. You recognize when you see it, and I see it. I saw it from the first moment I stepped into the space itself. We've talked primarily about Jones Antiques, and we've alluded to the Bitter Inn above that. And the Bitter Inn itself, if I'm correct, occupies what would have been the equivalent of three storefronts, attics that they all shared. Mm-hmm. Is that the best way to put
That's
that?
A really good way to put it. And okay. Thank you for the kind words as we started. I appreciate
Absolutely.
That. Yeah. The Bitter Inn exists in a space that was primarily just warehouse space for the businesses below it, also some of them adjacent to it, next door to our building. And when we came in there that day in January and saw that space, my father and I, we were just taken aback, and that immediately I started thinking this would be a great place to have evening events.
Yes.
You know, and I didn't know what that was exactly, but
yes.
That's where I went to.
And what's interesting is I was led to you by way of a 1 year that I had a birthday party a few years ago. I changed it into a thank you party, so it was very important to me that the space feel right and hospitable to the large group of people I was bringing in to say thank you to for various reasons that you and I know. And I do remember, as an event planner and a person that had a PR firm for years, my first order of business was arranging all the furniture in a way that I thought would work best. And you know, you very calmly led me to the idea that maybe my party would work well in the way that it had always happened before, and pointed to the fact that there's a table with six tables here. There's a couple of sofas in here, and it turned out perfect. It's the kind of party I would have wanted to have happened, and it allowed me during this party to go from group to group to group and have one-on-one time. So there's something about that that I don't know if you were conscious of, but if not, a little creative genius again. You know, there's no reason to move all of that furniture up there. And it also serves, am I correct, all the items that are there for the most part are part of what you're selling via Jones Antiques.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are for sale.
And you made a couple of good sales the night
at
my party,
right?
If I remember right.
That always kind of bums me out a little bit, because I like to keep things constituted in the manner that they are, but it makes Dad happy. So, then plus two, it gets me to, I get to go back and backfill those things that have sold with something, give it a new, you know, flair. So, that's just something I probably shouldn't be as upset about, but
And then if we step below, Jones Antiques into the basement and through a door into a space that's underneath the adjacent storefront space, we find something quite interesting as well. Tell us what's beneath Jones Antiques.
Okay, so what's underneath Jones Antiques is the Bunker Militaria, where we sell a lot of antique firearms, hats, flags, uniforms, bayonets, and that's primarily World War I and World War II. And then next door to that, underneath Willow Tree Market, is the Monkey Wrench. And the Monkey Wrench is another event venue space that we have with a, I would say it's got a more of a lean towards live music. That's really the theme down there. We want to encourage live performances down there, whether it's a private party being hosted or if it's something that we put on ourselves, you know, a live music show.
Right.
That's what that space is for, mostly.
And when I had my last party there, I brought country music legend Myla Mason, who was the top of the charts in the 90s and now works primarily as a songwriter and works with up-and-coming artists, including her two very talented daughters. And apparently there's been some talk between her and you and your father about the idea of having a songwriter night, a place where songwriters can get together and get up and perform. And so I see a lot of more creativity coming out of that. But one feature that I'm just a kid that I'm so excited about, I think ever since I've seen sliding bookcases, and generally it's always a funny little horror film or something from, say, the 1960s, but certainly in Young Frankenstein with the revolving bookcase, you're creating a sliding bookcase that people can move to the side from the Monkey Wrench to step into. Am I correct? You're using the back part of the store that carries a lot of militia gear. To be a separate little lounge area.
Yeah, right. So we've parsed off a piece of the bunker, and we're going to use it as kind of like a little pub area. And we wanted to have kind of a speakeasy feel. So if you're in the Monkey Wrench, you'll see a book. I'll have this put together in the next month or so, hopefully, and then shorter than that. You'll see a bookcase, and you'll be able to slide it back, and then you'll be able to go into a little pub style area. And that'll all be kind of secretly partitioned off by this bookcase that'll be on casters.
What feels so great about it is that you're on the one of the two block streets in the town of Cookeville called Staley Avenue, between two of the what were once major thoroughfares going east-west, which are Spring and Broad. So it almost has a little alley feeling to it.
You've
got the little awning. So you step back into this little, you know, sort of dark. It's not even a dark alley. It's obviously safe and well lit, but so fun stepping onto Staley Avenue, which you, for the most part, wouldn't have entered to do business over the years for any particular reason. And here you are reopening that, and then you've got your sliding bookcase, and it all feels so great.
It's one of the only alleys in town, you know, that's that way, and it gives it more of a downtown feel because of that.
It does,
And that's deliberate. You know, that's what we kind of want to captivate capture.
If you've never been to the West Village in New York City, I just saw a great documentary that was made in the 1960s, which talked about the fact that Greenwich Village actually felt like a village within New York. It does not anymore because of real estate development, but that has this great little – that whole thing that you've created on the east side of the square, both on the storefront side, which is Washington Avenue, and back in Staley – Avenue has a great little village feel to it, you know, and you're bringing a bit of something big city. You're bringing something that's good about a big city to what we call a thriving micropolitan. And you also have paid homage to a little bit of history here and there along the way. And I was not aware of this, nor were my father or my aunt, who both know their Cookeville history, in that the upstairs space again, we're going to climb back up two or three flights again to go to the Bitter Inn, that there was once a... Tell me the origin of the name The Bitter Inn.
Well, first, let me say I appreciate what you said about the village, you know, in New York City. That has been a source of inspiration for me personally. I've taken many trips to New York. And one of the reasons why I do what I do is because when people actually see what I, you know, acknowledge the efforts I've made, like you have, I mean, it just is like fuel for the fire. The Bitter Inn was originally a place in the 60s. That my
in our town of Cookeville.
Yeah,
correct?
Yeah. It was just behind us, where the probation office is now, across from Bobby Q's. The Bitter Inn was a place in the 60s where high school kids went. They held dances, and it's kind of spooky. There's a newspaper article from then. The space was 50 by 100, which ours is, and it was decorated with red, white, and green, which ours has got a lot of those colors up there. We saw that article, and it was just like, I don't know, it's like, you know, chills.
Was it short lived?
Just I want to say it was less, a half a decade or maybe less.
Yeah. There'd be a reason. Of course, I went to my aunt and my dad, and my aunt, I was told sometime after she passed by several people, I don't know who we're going to go to ask the trivial little questions about history, because only she knew those, and she did not know of the Bitter Inn, but that's because she would not have been a teen in her 60s,
right,
and you're talking
yeah.
about a teen club. Its location was on Spring, is that correct?
On Spring, I don't know the address exactly, okay. But it's just right across from where Bobby Q's is now. Yeah, and we were, so when we were developing the building, right when we first got in, this was back in 2011, me and Dad were cleaning out the basement, and he found an old card, an old flyer that said the Mad Hatter's playing at the Bitter Inn. I was like, God, that is such a wonderful name.
Yes.
And then when we were kicking around names back in 16, what we're going to call this space, you know, I developed a space upstairs without any idea of what I was going to call it. And I had thrown out things like the Peppermint Hippo or, you know, just whatever.
Right.
And we had the Bitter Inn. I thought, man, that is such a perfect name. And it's got this history behind it. And, you know, Dad went there and people will know about it. And I just thought it was just a great name.
Yeah.
So that's where
yeah.
that came from.
Yeah, it's got a great feel to it. And again, if you were to start there at a party and having a bite to eat and ask either David, his father, or his mom, might I take a look downstairs? I've always found them more than willing to say, let's, you know, I've had people that I brought to parties there that I've said, I really want to show them the it's called the bunker, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The bunker, for those that are interested in war history and military gear. It's not an area of expertise of mine, but I've been always fascinated. You know, you bring in a diverse array of things that would interest anybody about objects that they normally wouldn't be interested in. And
right.
you seem to have an eye for that, you know.
Well, and what we want to do down there is we want to, you know, a lot of our focus is on World War II, because there were some atrocities that happened during the 20th century, and those are things we don't need to forget. And a lot of that happened in communist Russia, and a lot of that happened in World War II Germany.
Right.
And what we do down there is, Our effort mainly down there is to educate and preserve those things so that they're never forgotten.
Yeah.
And we also celebrate the triumphant victory that the Americans had. I mean, we had help, but we triumphed in that war.
Yeah.
And after that war, our country, you know, it prevailed.
Yeah. You know, you're like several people that I've had in the studio, and there are times I can actually be that person as well. Rather than leading the cart and announcing as you go what I'm doing, I find you to be a quiet, humble guy who very smartly knows to stay behind the cart and, should it get stuck, how to get it out of the mud. And I'm assuming
Thank you.
You've had occasions like that. before, you must have had some ups and downs with the business for it to be as successful as it is, right?
Yes, we have. You know, you run into little things here and there. You know, you'll have great ideas about a project, but you've got to contend with like building codes, for instance. And sometimes those things seem arbitrary. I don't think that they are, but sometimes they feel that way, but they're actually meaningful.
Absolutely. And all great businesses have seen difficulty along the way. We could talk. I for one, could listen to David Jones, and perhaps we'll be back talking about other events you have coming up. But for today, I've enjoyed talking to David Jones. This is Louis Matheny with Local Matters. See you soon.